Supernatural, scene 36, take one. Marker.
Action.
Hello, my children.
The Crossroads contains explicit language and discussion. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
You son of a bitch.
Storm's coming. You boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural, The Crossroads. I am your host, Thomas Cowley, and joined with me today is Michael Flores.
Hello.
Ryan has currently been lost in shipping transit on his journey across the Pacific Ocean. So for the meantime, you're going to have just some really nerdy conversations with Mike and I.
Yeah.
Until we can relocate his pod that we believe was lost at sea. He's alive. We know that. But yes, it's just going to be the two of us for a little bit. So that means you're going to get dumb jokes, less fart jokes, but still equally dumb ones.
Yeah.
Followed by nerdy, in-depth discussions about stuff that no one else in their right mind should probably put that much attention into. But, you know, that's why we're here, and that's why you're listening. And in this episode, we are embarking on a brand new series of discussions centered on the Dynamite Entertainment Supernatural comic book written by Greg Pak with art by, I want to say, Eder Messias?
Yeah, I think I got it all right. I think you got it right.
At least close. So,
but again, the combined IQ in this room is 17. Just below 90. And I'll just give some credit.
Below 90. Nice. So yeah, it's a first new piece of media in some time. Not just a spinoff like we had with the Winchesters, which was both a prequel and a spinoff and a side story and a mistake. But now we have official Supernatural in-universe narrative content that takes place within the series proper. And that's actually kind of exciting. This is also, as Mike informed me, at least right now, allegedly, not a limited run miniseries, but an ongoing comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty fucking cool.
This is what we've been asking for at least 20 years.
For at least 20 years. Longer than the show was on.
Why do we not have ongoing tie-in media?
We've said, you're right. We have said that for like a long ass time. Shit. At least 10, we have been saying that.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. So this is exciting in that respect because while there were good things about the mini series or the limited runs, essentially the one of six episodes kind of thing, or issues. The earlier comics.
Yeah.
While those were nice in some respect, this, I think, gives more opportunity for new stories, other stories, building on something, new worlds. Like, the limited series forces you to stick within a small framework of just this small little story you're telling. But this setup lets them build into established characters, build into characters that we wish we had had more time with but didn't get.
The possibilities are endless. I mean, you have so much leg room.
Ellen, Joe, Bobby, Rufus, we can go into all of these characters. John, we can get new stories with John Winchester that just fit in seamlessly, that aren't just a one and done.
Stories, perhaps maybe even dealing with certain demons that we that we are privy to now because we have watched the show, but we know they exist.
Wait for the demon to show red eyes and we'll be like, holy fuck, it's Crowley.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. I've got a smile just thinking about it, and I don't remember what that's like.
Wow. I would agree with that, though.
But this is true. It is true.
I have not seen you smile and say the words supernatural
in some
in a
time.
Very long time.
Well, in my defense, it's been off the air for 5 years, so that made me sad for that's ever. This is an ongoing monthly series, and that's pretty nice. You know, I'm looking forward to that a lot. Honestly, dude, to get ahead of ourselves just a little bit, I enjoyed this. I'll just go ahead and say it.
Yeah, so did I. Quite a bit.
To the point that I'm like, shit, maybe I should just get a subscription for this one and have it delivered.
Okay.
Because I haven't had, dude, do you know the last time I had a comic book subscription? That's probably actually 20 years ago.
Yeah. Or at least when I first met you, because I met you, what, 2010, 2011 at a comic shop.
I think, yeah.
What a bunch of nerds. We met each other at a comic shop.
You know.
What a story. Can we keep that private?
Let's delete it. Let's change it. Fix that in post.
It's fucking embarrassing.
But this is, I honestly think I might, because other comic books hadn't enticed me for a while. And I never really cared for the never ending ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. Things I had collected over the years were limited to some degree. But this actually, I was like, I enjoyed my evening reading this. It felt like I had like a little episode, just me on the couch.
Yeah. The only thing I was really adamant about wanting was for this to feel like
authentic.
Supernatural. Yes, authentic, not generic. You know how some comic book adaptations and tie-ins are just
exactly
like
exactly what you're talking
they
about.
They have this veneer of what it's supposed to be, but it really isn't. It feels generic. This felt like a legit Supernatural installment.
It really did. It really, really did. Which is, again, also nice, because with the limited run miniseries that we had before, some of them felt legitimate, but then others near the end were like, what? This doesn't really feel the same, but I definitely get what you're saying, where there's a lot of things that just throw a veneer, a skin over a generic story and say, oh, yeah, no, this is Firefly. Don't worry about it. Oh, yeah, this is, you know, this other thing you love. Don't worry about it. It's close enough. And I will say that I like that this, admittedly, one issue so far, had not had that feeling. So before we get into too much more, the synopsis for this one is set during the early days of the Winchester's road hunting years, sometime amid the events of seasons 1 and 2, Sam and Dean arrive in the fading factory town of Windler, Ohio, after reports of mysterious, spontaneous fires and workers turning to ash. The brothers, still carrying the weight of their father's absence and the early scars of their family curse, pose as investigators and quickly discover that something infernal is brewing beneath the surface. Now, what this also needs a little bit of some clarity brought to that concept of the timeline for this, because this is something that we talked about in our first discussion of this, which was just a news update, I think, at the time, that this was claiming to be set, I think it was between seasons 1 and 2. And that's where we were like, how in the fuck are you going to do that? Unless it's a fever dream of the dying brain of Dean, spoiler alert, for the end of season 1. It wouldn't make any sense. So this one is actually been clarified by Greg Pak himself. And was this in an interview? I'm not sure where exactly.
It was in an interview, because I believe the interviewer was also confused.
Okay.
So Pak fleshed it out a bit better and explained what he actually meant.
So he said that these stories are set during and in between the events of seasons 1 and 2. So effectively the hunts that we did not see. And that's a lot better. These are the in-between weeks. These are the in-between days. These are the moments that were not televised. So it's not rewriting any continuity. These stories will, in fact, fill in the gaps of the Winchester's unseen adventures on the road. Their time, much like the novels did, for those who have read the books, it says takes place between seasons 6 and 7.
Yeah.
An undescript time roughly within these parameters is what we're doing for this comic.
Gives so much more room. And I'm sure what they'll do, if this is a successful run, they'll probably do this for about a year.
Yeah, I
maybe even two, because this maybe this is forward. Now the trend in other comic book runs where they do these series where they'll stick with a specific set of parameters or continuity. If you're dealing with an established IP, Star Trek does this a lot, and they'll spend about 2 years, 24 issues within that set period,
and then move it forward.
And then they move it forward so ever so slightly.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling that's probably what they're going to do, and if they do it,
that's smart.
That way, it'll be, I mean, dude, it'll give us countless years.
They could give you theoretically another 15 years
of content
that
we can talk about and enjoy while we're waiting for the series to come back,
which I think is going to happen. Like, let's be honest, but that is nice to see that they've put already. That gives me a lot more faith that they've put effort into thinking, oh, we're going to make sure this fits in and doesn't break anything, which is one of the things we complained about with the Winchester show. Admittedly, it was doing it to build up to the finale, season finale reveal, but it sacrificed a lot along the way, trying to be like, oh, no, it fits. Don't worry about it. Just whatever. It's fine. Kind of attitude of mixing continuity that I know for me was like oil and vinegar. It just doesn't work. Doesn't mix for me. So I got unnecessarily upset, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's called being
understandable.
It's called being a fan. Now, we've kind of already given this, but initial thoughts on this is it's honestly a very solid debut issue. It's got the right tone for the time period of seasons one and two. It has the right, I would say, I think it could use some improvement, but it has the right characterization of Sam and Dean and their banter and who they are, how they talk to each other. Some of that bravado of Dean, the earnest skepticism of Sam, the stuff that really set the tone for the beginning of the series, I think they've done a pretty good job capturing that so far.
Yeah, and that is something that I was also looking for in this comic, because sometimes, even in the novels that I've read, several of them, and the early comics, sometimes our issues is not with the story itself. The story is fine, but it is the characterization. Specifically, if you're talking about certain time periods, because the characterizations of our heroes, Sam and Dean, they change throughout the run. Just like people grow, they mature through experience and they change their attitudes, their moods, and sometimes they're even their worldview, right? So that's right. Natural for something to happen over the course of 15 years. But if you're writing a story that takes place between the events of, say, seasons two and season four, then you got to make sure that you're adapting the correct time frame in the way of, or I should say, the appropriate characterization of the time frame.
Yeah.
And not, you don't want to tell a story taking place during season three.
And it's season 15, and, Sam.
Yeah.
Wildly different.
And luckily we got that bro-ish, that Kripke bro back and forth that Kripke does very well.
And that is the thing, is like, that's one thing where I'm like, some of it is feels very, we're starting out. We know what we are trying to do, but we don't quite have it, but it's a good, honest attempt.
Almost like the pilot.
Right. And then there's other parts in this series, in this comic issue, where I'm like, oh yeah, that's, I can see the scene, like how it would play out.
Especially in the mill.
For me, it was the initial restaurant.
Yes, bit. That too. Yeah.
Sam trying to physically push Dean out because he wants to keep flirting with the waitress. That's season one. That is Dean to a T.
That's
season
so
one.
Dean.
It sounds corny, but that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I like so far from what we've seen when it comes to the writing and the overall tone. I would say that they've nailed it, or they've matched it very, very close for your initial run, which something which I expect to get better as time goes on too. But Pack's writing is effective. It's grounded. It's not simplistic in the, we're going to fight monsters. And like you said, the kind of the skin stuff that we had, not maybe this, but other comics have done, where it's just a generic story with a trapping of an IP laid over it. This doesn't quite feel like that. This feels like he has an understanding of early supernatural.
Yes. It is a derivative emotions where you just kind of trying to grab at something from the TV show. This feels like it's its own thing. So like, it's not just relying on what has come before. So you guys know what these characters are about. You know, the emotional stakes. You feel its own singular, unique undercurrent that coheres with supernatural proper, but also it's its own thing. It's not a story that's resting on the laurels of the series itself. It is building its own emotion, its own undercurrents.
It's not resting on the laurels of the existing IP and then just putting in no effort. This is putting in a lot of effort, knowing the framework it needs to work around, which is the existing IP.
Yeah, and it's fleshing out its own like mythological threads.
It's the difference between using something as a baseline foundation and then just building on top whatever direction you want versus this is a framework of a house and we're going to build out the interior.
It's the difference of building with regulations and licenses in the United States as opposed to building the same house in Mexico where you can go zigzag and go five stories and just stop if you want without even completing your home. I'm speaking from experience.
I see you're talking about some place?
Yeah, my TL1 has an incomplete house.
Does he really?
Yeah, it's just half. It just stopped. I'm not joking. It looks like something from like Wizard of Oz or like
it's like some like
Alice in Wonderland looking house.
Yeah. Jesus. All right. But thankfully, this isn't falling into your uncle's house.
He ran out of money halfway through. Literally at the halfway point.
I don't know if I should laugh at his plight, but that's fucking funny. So yeah, what they've done with this is definitely stay within the framework of what came before. And they are trying to set up their own story vibe. It feels, I love that it continues, like truthfully, that this was a self-contained issue, but also has set up for where it's going next.
Yeah.
Like, dude, what
it's
I,
not
what makes
doing
me
those dumb, you guys remember Crowley's just around the corner. No, they don't even use mm-hmm. that. It creates from the very beginning, its own myth.
It really does make me sad. When a lot of my praise of not just Supernatural, but like media these days, I was like, wow, they did it like they used to when things were good. Like, that should not be a standard point of criticism.
Well, so see, my issue with a lot of tie-in media,
mm-hmm.
specifically Star Trek, I read a lot of those Star Trek books, a lot of the Star Trek comics, they seldom have the balls. And I understand, you know, you're in the market, right? You're trying to make mm-hmm. sure that people buy things. But you can't have a Star Trek book or a comic book that doesn't reference something from a movie, something from a prior episode. You can't just be 100% unique.
Yeah.
Luckily, with this first issue, it didn't rely on anything other than the fact that you here are these characters you're familiar with and the world that you're in.
Here's what it is. It doesn't feel like so much tie-in media. As it feels like, what if they adapted a script that never made it
there
to the screen?
Go. Yes, it's an unproduced script.
Into a comic book issue.
Yeah.
Because that's what it felt like as I was reading it. That's how it felt. And I like that. That's a nice move. And they're not just feeling like a script that hadn't been produced, but they're also, like you said, they're putting their own touches on it of the emotional undercurrents of family, the mythology that they're probably trying to build towards, some running themes, perhaps. We'll see. It's too early to tell right now. But the issue ends in a strong way that feels like it's setting up a future of what they want to do, the story they kind of want to talk about.
It feels like a classic television hook.
Well, it does. So what is it? It ends with them contemplating the same way the brothers do in the show. The experience they had in that week's episode, talking about, I don't want to spoil too much. I guess I kind of have to, maybe. Well, like to Sam's point, like they're talking about the experience they had and like what they've learned from the hunt this week sort of thing. That same in the car, the last 2, 3, 5 minutes that were always important. And he talks about how, quote, there really aren't any rules, are there? All these ghosts and demons and monsters in Dad's book, we think we've got them figured out, and the worst people walk away with the prize.
Okay, pause right there. So this is a bit of a meta moment. We think we've got them all figured out. He's telling us, the writer, that you guys think you know about all these ghosts and demons and monsters, but just wait. I guarantee you that's the meta angle there, because look at the setup. The setup is rather unique.
Yeah. Again, not wanting to spoil so much, but it does a good job of, honestly, just like, that's what I keep coming back to. It felt like I read an episode in a much shorter time period, you know? And this is another element of just what makes it feel real to the original source material in that respect, that they have that wrap-up conversation. It's leading to somewhere else. It directly leads to the final page of where they're going for issue 2. And what I also kind of like in a weird way is, like, in between episodes of the actual show, obviously in real world, a week passed. And in the narrative world, anywhere between a week or a day or something or longer would have passed. So they just kind of jumped around between things. And we started in medias res, where we're in the middle of their life right now. What I kind of like about the comic book concept that we might see from this is we directly see how they go from one situation into the next and what that looks like. The events in this issue lead them to go to the location that is setting up issue two. I kind of like that. It's a little bit more connective tissue. It's not necessarily something you need to have, but I like that it's there as a fan who, you know, is the kind of person who knows every year of a character's life and what happened. So having that connective tissue is kind of nice.
It gives it more of a serial vibe as well.
Well, and I think serial is really the word, because this really does read like a classic Monster of the Week episode. It is straight up feels exactly the same. They investigate a small town mystery. It's tied to a bunch of weird shit happening around town. They look into it and do a bit of investigating, and it builds from there. And this does very much invoke the early procedural seasons 1 and 2 in particular, that were, what are we seeing this week? What are we hunting this week? And what I also pay a lot of respect for in this issue is they pick something brand fucking new.
Yep.
Dude, and
that's what I was saying.
We've had discussions in this room with Ryan about how many different things they could still touch on, how many different creatures and lore and myth and different cultures they could bring into the world of Supernatural, that it has nearly limitless potential in a lot of ways. And rather than do what other, I think, that kind of lazy trappings of just steal an IP and call it whatever and move on, where they just, oh yeah, it's a vampire, whatever, fuck it. And then they get like the lore of how you fight a vampire wrong. This used, let's bring in a brand new creature concept and let's give it its own lore and learning moments and established risks of fighting this thing.
This was what I was talking about with the one, my comparison to Star Trek novels. It's,
yeah,
it's not relying on the obvious.
No. It literally relies on, you know who Sam and Dean are, roughly, and you know they have their dad's book, and he's missing.
Yeah, and I think that's
outside
smart.
Of that, is any of this tied to the show that you need to know?
It's not.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it a great strategy for marketing purposes.
Well, and because, for the comic book medium.
Yes, you want, your hope is for someone. You already know Supernatural fans are going to buy comic book. Your hope is for it to bring in new audiences. And if you make something so closely connected to where it feels like you must know 15 seasons, then you're never going to bring in anyone new to read that comic book. And that's why this comic book, it was a smart strategy to write it essentially as its own thing. And if you know, you know. And if you don't, you're okay. All right.
Yeah. And so that's the cool thing that they did. It really does fit the season 1-2 timeline, where you could just kind of jump into an episode and move forward from there, even if you've missed a few.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that really worked for me is, even though they went with something new, you know, the monster being an imp, but the idea, the danger of dealing with this imp is directly connected to everything that we understand of Supernatural. The affinity for the soul, you know, being the ultimate goal, the ultimate superpower in the world of Supernatural that everyone's vying for. Because sure enough, the imp is connected to your soul. Mm-hmm. If you use it, you lose your soul. I love that part, because you're using something interesting that's unique and new to your comic, an imp. I don't think we've even heard of imps in Supernatural.
No. Well, we've definitely never seen one. There's a possibility that they threw out the word as a reference. Like, they've referenced black dog, but you don't ever see a black dog.
But, you know.
Maybe, but I don't believe they did. Because I sat there reading it, and I'm like, oh, shit. That's new.
Yeah, so it connects to, or into, one of Supernatural's foundational tropes, which is the fragility and power of the human soul. So right there is a win as well. And then you have John's journal, which is the thing. You know, it's one of the best narrative devices
such
in Supernatural.
Idea.
it features predominantly or prominently as both a MacGuffin and an anchor to continuity. So it works, and its presence actually reinforces the sense that these stories aren't just reinventing the mythology, which is not what we want. We don't want them to reinvent the mythology, but we're almost like rediscovering it through these fresh cases.
Well, and that's the thing. It also builds into the vibe of feeling like the episodes or a script that wasn't developed from season one.
That had to be the ultimate strategy
in
his writing room when Hack was kicking around ideas. Like, you know what? I'm going to save myself time and effort. The best thing I can possibly do is pretend I'm writing for the show
season one and two. It really works. They have the investigation where they're talking to the widow, and then she has that whole moment. She's like, what was it called? And then the next scene, we hard cut to the diner, and it's Sam explaining something on a laptop. Like, that is how the script would have been written. Like, it works in that way so well. And then that leads to cross-referencing what he's looked up online with their dad's journal. And then they meet a new character in this investigation that is only there because of some actions they took previously in the prior scene. Like, it all fits. It doesn't just feel like a series of, oh, fuck it, then this happens. But it actually does read like a trimmed down episode. And that really, really does work. And it's got a nice little, you know, even twist within the...
It's one of my favorite parts.
And this is spoilers, and we apologize for that. But, I mean, it's been out for like a month almost. Like,
go pick it up.
Just go buy it. It's $5.
Yeah.
You have that in change somewhere.
Yeah. We're all boycotting Starbucks right now, right? So you're saving at least $10 a day.
Sure, whatever.
Just...
But it has its own nice little twist with this other character... what's her name? Effie?
Yeah.
Effie Windler of Windler Enterprises, that she is essentially monetizing the occult and commodifying supernatural forces for corporate gain, which is that not just America?
It's very timely.
It is very timely. It's
capitalism at its best.
Dude, South Park is hitting on this kind of shit right now.
Yeah.
It is very on point, and it's a nice little shift in what you would expect. And again, this is where it feels like a script from the show, where you're hunting this monster, but the real monster or the real person who you should be afraid of is this other human being that's taking advantage. Like, do you think back to Hollywood Babylon in season two, where Sam's like, you learn that the supernatural and the afterlife exists, and the first thing you do is write a script and like make a movie about it. And he's like, hey, I gotta pay my bills. And the guy, the sleazy writer producer, is just, yeah, fuck it, whatever, I'm gonna move on. None of this existential thoughts of the meaning of life and the fact that there is an afterlife and how do I live my life to result in not going to hell. No. It's just, yeah, whatever, I can make a buck. Like, that really does fit with the show's, A, just general vibe that they've had before, but also those longstanding moral questions about exploitation, corruption, the line between good and evil. Are the humans monsters? Are the monsters more human in certain situations?
And some of those things, those aspects, exploitation, corruption... Some of those things don't necessarily come into play till later in those seasons, but this is, again, gesturing to the larger world, the diegetic world that we know people out there make a living off the occult. Season three, Bella.
Oh, I thought you meant real life.
Oh, let's get in the business if that's a thing.
Dude, I'm saying, look at some things.
And then you have season seven, the Leviathan, that literally
corporate
infiltrated, you know, corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So... It just feels...
The businessman who sold his soul to Crowley in his first appearance. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And the other thing that really worked for me is staying true to particular archetypes that just have to be there at this point, supernatural. And I'm talking about what I would call the standout supporting character of the issue, which is Effie Windler. She feels like a direct descendant from the show's lineage of those morally ambiguous female figures, Meg, Ruby, Bella.
Bella was the one that, like, not to the same James Bond degree. Mood,
the attitude.
Exactly. Exactly. With that, well, I tricked you boys and I got mine, so later. Like, that felt very Bella-esque to me.
She's attractive. I know
that she sold her
soul. She's supposed to be sexy. I mean, we're getting back to the basics here. Early Supernatural.
It feels very reminiscent. It really, really does. And I think that might be one of the main reasons why I enjoyed it as much as I did. You know, she does feel like Bella. She's clever. She is sexy and seductive. She's dangerous in a way that they aren't sure of. She has connections that makes her a potential threat in other ways.
Yeah.
Later.
But also possibly an ally, right?
Could be. Could be. Especially because of the soul situation that she's currently in. Maybe right now she doesn't care, but down the road, you know, maybe having to find some way to help her out, we'll find out. But her inclusion very much shows that Pack understands the archetypal balance that gives the series weight and texture. The women who challenge them, the mirror characters, the ones who often outsmart or outmaneuver them. I mean, it was some of the stuff that in the first couple seasons is incredibly interesting. Like besides Bella, I'm completely forgetting his name right now, but the police officer, his actual character's name from seasons two and three, who's trying to hunt them down.
I forgot his name too right now.
Agent Simmons. Hendricks or Hicks Hendricks. Or something like that.
I'm just throwing out names.
I'm blanking right now, but he was a great real world threat as well. So maybe this can be somebody who in the comic book world, at least, can pose an ongoing threat or a recurring element for them that would also fit the show back in the day. So I think a lot of it really, really does work more than I expected it to.
Yeah, way more. I mean, the fact that I was able to put together, jot down some notes.
Like you were doing an old show.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, it is writing itself right now.
Yeah, dude. It really does succeed in reestablishing Supernatural's voice. What made it? The voice in terms of writing is that unique element that makes it sound and feel like this thing you know and love. The way Star Wars is written is incredibly different than the way Star Trek is written, despite the fact that both are in space. You know, the X-Files is very different than Supernatural, which is different than Buffy. Each one has its own unique voice that if theoretically you're reading it, a la comic book, you can tell which one is supposed to be which and whose character is who without really having to look at the image or have a name above it. You should be able to put the pieces together. And this really does feel like it is trying to adhere to this. It's respectful of canon that has come before, but it's in a unique way not bound by that same, this has to happen and then we have to have this character because of the nature of being these in-between stories. Overarching will have to stay the same, but that's fine. That's why we're even enjoying it in the first place. But the highway road trip, the moral gray zones, the burden of knowledge as they go on and learn more about their adventures, these things all really do lend the impact or the stuff that works from the TV show lends itself to the comic book here. And it has that episodic timing and rhythm even that, like I said, it goes from one scene to the next. It reads like the script would.
Pack really did translate that over very well. He did
a really well, really well done job.
The beats were very similar. And that's why, Thomas, I think you're right. He probably looked at this as, I'm going to write this no different than if I was in the writing room during seasons 1 and 2.
Why would you?
That seems like the only strategy to go with.
Well, I'm going to do this thing that's just surefire to work. Well, yeah. Awesome. I'm glad. Most people don't.
I would just put up a bunch of like dummies, you know, little blow up dolls, mm-hmm. make this fake writing room. I'll
just so you
take a permanent marker and write Kripke on one. And
okay, now you're just sounding like the Texas Chainsaw House.
And then I'll put little birthday hats on them. God. I'm like, okay, guys, we're going to write an episode together, guys.
Stop fighting with me, Kripke.
Stop staring at me like that.
Oh, man. And for those of you who are interested in buying the comic, I will say one thing I found out that's kind of cool. There's like something like 20 plus different variant covers.
God bless you.
Some of them are just the standard photo that unfortunately was the only copy available at the shop I was at. And that's kind of
the lamest one.
That's kind of the lamest one.
Yeah.
They have others that are more artistic, look like the draw, the
super
artwork.
Super cool.
But they also have one that I want to find that is a homage to the Exorcist cover art of the street light with Sam and Dean. I think that's fucking awesome, dude.
Explain what variants are, though, because you got to remember some of our listeners might not be comic book buffs.
Fair enough. So for those of you who are not comic book buffs, the comic book content is always the same. However, the cover art and that imagery is different, and that's what they call a variant. There's a standard cover. There's variant one and two, like different artworks, maybe by different people entirely.
Sometimes they'll commission like specific special artists.
Yes, or they'll do like a black and white cover, or they'll do a textless cover where there's no words or anything. It's just the image. They have a bunch of different
versions. Sometimes they do blank covers. For some reason,
people are... black or all white.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen... Well, the only one I know who did that, and I'm not as much of a comic nerd these days, but the only one I know of was Spider-Man did that for the World Trade Center episode.
Oh, really?
It was all black. Yeah. So... there's a lot of different variants. I want to find the Exorcist cover because that's just really cool to me as a movie nerd and a dork in general. But honestly, the first issue, if it is any indication, Dynamite Comics has done a really good job setting up a supernatural series. There really could be something of value that could bring the nostalgia of the old with new storytelling possibilities and giving us lost hunts of Sam and Dean Winchester, something that we haven't had for 5 years now and more.
These can be adapted to a Netflix exclusive anime cartoon. I mean, isn't that the new thing now when the actors get too old, but you want to go back to the original era? Do some cartoons. Why not?
Maybe
get the producers for Blue Samurai.
Dude, when is the second season of that coming out?
I hope someday.
Eventually? It's already been 2 years?
One of the best series I've watched in the last 5 years.
So good. Disappointing that we haven't seen more. But anyway, for those of you who are interested, check out the Supernatural comic book. It's just Supernatural issue one, Dynamite Comics. Mike, before we go, what would you give your rating for this based on our normal episodic TV score?
You know what? I like an 82. I think it's a very solid start. I would probably even, I'm trying to be conservative here, but I'd probably go even higher. But you know what? 82%, it has everything it needs to be an actual supernatural story. But at the same time, it feels unique. It feels like it's trying not to be overly derivative. There isn't any of those member berries. They very easily could have already hinted at Bella because of the commodification of the occult. They could have already alluded to certain people we already know of, and I'm glad they didn't. He's not jumping. It's not about selling the comic book based on, hey, you remember this character? Mm-hmm. No, it's based on, hey, remember the Winchesters? Well, here's a fresh take. Here's a fresh story. So, yeah, I liked it.
I'd give a similar rating. I'd say 82. 83, maybe like right in there is where I would land as well, because I was captivated the whole time. It wasn't like an episode where I'd be, holy shit, you have to read this story. It's not like the first miniseries who did Origins.
Oh, that one is also very artistic.
Yeah, but this felt very much like this could just slot in between a couple of Monster of the Week episodes in season one, and you wouldn't have missed a beat. And reading this on my couch, just kind of enjoying being engrossed in the comic book, it was a nice return to what watching the show used to feel like. And in a way, I think that's like the highest praise I could give this.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
If you are interested, check it out at your local comic book shop, or I'm sure you can find it online these days too. But don't just read it. Like, go for it. Try and find one of the variant covers. See which one you can. There's like 30 or some shit like that.
Yeah, help it out anyways.
Help it out. Support the series.
I want this.
Let's hope to get more for at least a good long while.
Yep.
So for that'll do it here for us at Supernatural The Crossroads. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You little maggot. You are no longer a part of this story. Hey, ass butt.